Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Len Casper presided over a very strange baseball game last night, and he joins us now on the Bernstein and McKnight show. You follow him on Twitter, at Len Casper. Len, that was a thing. It started out weird. There was a bunch of plays we've never seen before, and then all of a sudden it turned into like a playoff game late.
It sure did. You know, I've never seen an inning quite like the one where the Braves ran out of the inning on two plays where it looked like the runner was safe. And because they didn't get the first replay reversed, the second one was not even allowed to be looked at. And the Cubs took advantage. I feel like that kind of decided the game. If Camargo is safe at the plate, I could see that being a 3 or 4 run inning, and it might have been the ball game. And then the ninth inning, as you said, Dan, it felt like an October game and just two great at-bats. Russell to tie it, and then Zobrist to give the Cubs the lead, and Brandon Morrow came in and was drama-free in the bottom of the ninth.
And we got you referencing Faulty Towers because you're talking about Fultonavich. And also, Fultonavich is just such a spaz. He's just so tightly wound that that's lending to it. Then Winkler comes in, and I think I was flipping with the basketball. So you're talking about Winkler, and I knew you had a Happy Days thing going on. So then I was trying to think of like the all-Cubs Happy Days actors name team, and I don't know. We'd have Thad Bosley, David Ross,
nice.
Billy Williams, and then I don't know if you could do Moose Morin for Aaron Moran if they would give you that. But there's probably more. But those were the only ones I had off the top of my head. I didn't know where that discussion was headed.
Yeah, my point was, I guess you could go Howard Johnson for Ron Howard since he finished his career as a Cub, right?
I'll get it to you.
Yeah, my point was that Winkler was born in 1990 and that he might not really know who the Fonz was. And JD's point was that the Fonz was so iconic that even younger TV viewers would know who he is. And I had to give him those points, so... Yeah, we veered off topic on occasion, but that's the fun of doing it. And as we said, it got really, really fun at the end of the game, and give the Cubs a lot of credit for not cracking after Edwards gave up the home run in the eighth.
Brian Snitker, the Braves manager, was all worked up during those plays, where it seemed like he had a pretty good argument for his guys being safe. I'm sure he was worked up in the postgame. I would imagine he'll be worked up in the pregame today. Are there... You know, as much as replay itself has moved forward in baseball, are there little tweaks that you'd like to see yet, or are we just dealing with a situation where we had a couple of bad calls and usually you don't see them back-to-back like that?
Look, I do think we are getting to a point, guys, where the inconclusive part of a replay decision has to be fixed a little bit. Home plate, to me, is kind of a perilous play because it's a little easier to tell when a guy touches a base because it's raised above the ground,
mm-hmm.
whereas home plate is not. And clearly, Camargo had kind of crossed the plane, to use a football phrase, but it was, I guess, not possible to tell if his fingers were actually touching home plate. So to me, we have to figure out a way probably to get a better look at home plate with, you know, the 4K resolution or whatever, maybe a ground level view to see if the hand or the foot actually touches the plate. Or we need to tweak the rule where if a player breaks the plane and if a body part is over home plate, that he is considered safe. Because I think everyone who saw the replay agreed that the hand was over the plate before the tag was applied, and I think that's why the Braves felt, and probably rightly so, that it should have been overturned. But the original call mattered. I think if Jim Wolf had called the runner safe, I think that call would have stood as well. And you just don't want a World Series game to be determined by a play like that.
Or you could actually use the basketball analogy of in the cylinder for offensive goaltending, which another rule I think they should get rid of completely anyway and just make it the international rule on that. But that's beside the point. Again, somebody running on the arm of Kyle Schwarber. Now, I get it that when going after a ball, there is a certain likelihood that Schwarber is going to fall down. I understand that. But if he doesn't fall down, and if he has the ball, he makes good throws. It reminds me a little bit of Alfonso Soriano that would do weird stuff and get misreads and take his little hop and take his eye off it. And he threw sidearm, but he threw accurately. And it wasn't the greatest arm, but it was effective. Maybe Kyle Schwarber is proving somewhat effective in that regard.
Well, I do think there's something that happens with outfielders and their arms. If you're considered a really good or above average outfielder, teams tend not to run on you a lot, and so your outfield assist totals won't necessarily reflect how good you are out there. Whereas I do think some teams look at Schwarber and they want to run on him. They think they can take advantage of it. And he's proven them wrong. And it was just a perfect throw. All three plays, you know, and I think that The two plays in the fifth inning, they probably got the calls wrong, but the throws were just spot on, both by Contreras. And then the first inning throw by Schwarber to give Freeman was just a seed exactly where he had to throw it. That's an inning's worth of outs the Braves gave up. I think in all three cases, you could say that they were the right decisions to do it. But the Cubs defensively were able to make those plays, and as I said, I think that ultimately determined the result of the game.
Have you ever seen a confluence like that of ball, catcher's mitt, and runner's foot?
No, I've never seen one quite like that. And Freeman, the only thing he probably could have done was try to jump over the catcher, but you know he can't see where the throw is. And as an on-deck hitter, Markakis was telling him to get down and slide. I don't know what the mechanic would be for the hand signal to jump over the catcher's hand. About the only thing we didn't see, we're kind of hoping that fifth inning would have ended on a steal attempt of second, runner called safe, and then the Cubs challenge, and they call him out. but I do have a feeling if that had happened, there would have been a lot of debris on the field.
Talking with the TV voice of the Cubs, Len Casper, here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Your thoughts about Yu Darvish yesterday? Pretty good pitching, 61 in total, had the cramp and he had to leave, and that puts the Cubs bullpen in another spot with Tyler Chatwood going today where they may have to cover some innings. But overall, I was pretty impressed with what he's able to show.
Yeah, they have an extra arm in the bullpen. They sent Mark Zagunas back to AAA as opposed to a relief pitcher, and I think that ended up being the right call. A couple of short starts here the last 2 days with Quintana. And then Darvish, we didn't know until after the game that he had the leg cramping. But I agree with you, Connor. I thought it was one of his better outings. He did give up the game-tying homer to Inciarte, but then, you know, buckled down and threw three nasty sliders to get Jose Bautista to end that inning. The velocity was good. The stuff was good. I felt like he mixed in more of his repertoire early in the game and, you know, gave his team a chance. You would have liked to have seen him gone five or six. And hopefully, physically, you know, he's able to bounce back and make his next start, which would be probably Sunday. I think we were all curious to see how it would go after almost 2 weeks off. And I think in the end, you'd have to say it was a positive performance.
Yeah, it's always something, though. We're always left with something. You love the way the ball is coming out of his hand. You love some of the pitch selection. It looks like he's got command and hitting his spots. It's just we're still waiting for the Darvish experience to solidify in our minds as a lot of fans and critical fans just want clearer evidence that it was obviously worth it.
Yeah, no, I think that's completely legitimate. And I think anyone who's watched all of his starts, and he's made seven of them and doesn't have a win yet, I think on a couple of occasions has pitched well enough to win. There have been a lot of pretty bad ones, and I think – you know, from a physical standpoint, just kind of getting him through whatever's been bothering him here lately, whether the cramping was related to the fatigue that put him on the DL in the first place. We'll maybe find out some more about that later today. But, yeah, stuff-wise and just the way he handled a really good Atlanta lineup through those four innings, I was impressed.
Len, you're one of the guys who keeps an eye on the league, both the American and National League, as best you can while you're doing the play-by-play for the Cubs. So I know you knew to a certain degree what the Braves had coming through the pipeline, but now that you've seen a couple of games where the Cubs have faced and two more against them, are you as impressed or even more impressed by the Braves? I've just been taken aback by some of that young talent they have and more to come.
Yeah, it's gotten here quickly, and you know, right off the bat you can see – you know, Ozzie Albies, and he's been great against the Cubs, so I don't want to overreact, but he looks to me like he's a Jose Altuve-type player with pop, switch hitter, should hit for average, really athletic defensively, and is only 21 years old. Acuna just massacred that pitch in the eighth inning last night. We've only seen him a couple of days here, but he's only 20. And you know, they seem to have more in the pipeline, and we're going to get a look at Mike Soroka, a young pitcher that we haven't seen yet. He's going to pitch tomorrow against John Lester. And, you know, Fulton Nevich is 26, so he's, you know, he's not real young, but they've been kind of waiting for him to take that next step. And I think, as my partner said on our telecast last night, probably the next step for him is to maybe try to sink the ball a little bit and try to get some earlier outs, because as good as he is and as hard as he throws, he works a lot of deep counts and has not been a guy who can go six innings. Although we're in an era now where starting pitchers are not really required or asked to go six or more innings. I mean, he's been kind of a five and a third type guy and has given their team a chance to win. But, yeah, I'm really impressed with the Braves. They don't really have a closer you would put in the top five or six in the league. So that could be an acquisition they might make in the middle of the year, assuming they're still in a playoff position. But other than that, I think the future's bright, and I think the short term is very bright as well.
We were talking about the way the strike zone might be evolving a bit, pitchers and hitters evolving, and everything was on display last night, because in Albies and Acuna, here are two players who obviously have selected for this ability, this supernatural ability to hit high velocity low in the zone. And Albie just sweeps everything wherever he wants to. And the ball that Acuna hit with the confidence and ability that he did, he didn't just run into one there where he saw it, he hit it, and he hit it very, very far off a guy throwing 97 miles an hour. And then there was the pitch that Wilson Contreras struck out on, which was a four-seam fastball up. And I started to think, I don't want to allow these moments to sort of overrepresent. But that I'm looking, maybe I'm just seeing more of that now. I'm seeing some of these hitters have difficulty with high spin rate fastballs up and in, and concentrating on dropping the head of the bat on low velocity, and just where sort of in this continuum some of this might change.
Well, think about 10 or 15 years ago, and you go back to when the Cardinals had Chris Carpenter, and obviously Adam Wainwright was early in his career, and Dave Duncan was their pitching coach. What was the best pitch in baseball? It was a sinking fastball. Not a ton of guys really live with that pitch now. You know, Roy Halladay, that was his bread and butter pitch. Now, it really is that the high four-seam fastball, and elevation is something Joe Maddon talks about a lot. And I think with the swing path now, that a lot of sluggers have, where, you know, they've got a little loop in their swing and they try to elevate the ball, it just makes sense to try to make them pop the pitch up or miss it out of the zone. And, you know, not a lot of umpires are going to call the letter high fastball a strike, but some will. And I think vertically, if the strike zone is tweaked, I'm more of the mindset of not giving pitches off the horizontal corners, but maybe a little higher and even a little lower. As long as it's over the plate, I don't really have a problem with more strikes being called, and that's maybe the evolution of the game right now. But yeah, I think high fastballs and 12 to 6 curveballs are really in vogue at the moment, and guys who have those two pitches, you're seeing them have a lot of success.
And members of Invogue, let the record show.
Right.
Sorry.
Members of Invogue.
Well, you knew it was coming.
But no, of course I did. Well, you mentioned, Len, high-velocity fastball and 12-6 curve. All I could think of was that's Carl Edwards Jr. profile. I mean, that's what he throws. And yes, he got hit up a little bit by the White Sox the other day and gave up a homer to Ronald Acuna, who's going to hit, I think, a few more before the season is over. But by and large, Edwards has had a pretty decent start to the season. The strikeouts have been high. The walks have come, back down a little bit, with the exception of the blip against the White Sox. I don't imagine you feel like he's about to tilt or go one way or the other. He's been a pretty steady presence for Joe.
Yeah, and again, you know, he's like a field goal kicker, man. You miss one, and even from, you know, 50 yards, and everyone goes, what's wrong with him? And, you know, guys hit home runs these days, and, you know, I don't think the Cubs are concerned at all about it. Obviously, the closer, Brandon Morrow, had the one bad game, but has really bounced back and has been as good as we've seen him here over the last week or so. And Justin Wilson, he's kind of very quietly jumped back into a much more prominent role, and you know, I think he could be a real key guy in that bullpen for the Cubs down the road. And when they acquired him, there was thought that he might end up being a closer before they, you know, signed Morrow in the offseason. And the stuff is really crisp, and he's hitting, you know, 96, 97 on his fastball. So that's a nice development to see as well.
Do you figure the conversation around or the Cubs' attitude toward Jason Hayward on the DL now is on the concussion list, I should say, is just kind of a wait and see and very, very patient thing that will just have to be a day-by-day kind of situation?
Yeah, and you guys remember when Chris Bryant, who didn't go to the DL, missed four games after he got hit up in the head area. You know, I think what happens in those spots is basically players – you know, they don't want them talking to the media. I think there's a very specific list of things that they have to go through before they can even get them back into baseball activities. And, you know, I think it's taken very, very seriously now, and guys are missing a lot more time as a result of either a concussion or some sort of symptoms of that. And, you know, I'm not a doctor, and I know you guys aren't either, but I get really worried about those whiplash-type plays. Remember Corey Koski, the corner infielder? His career ended. He didn't even hit his head. He fell backwards in foul territory, and his head very violently whipped back toward the ground. You know, those are the ones that I really worry about. Albert Almora made a catch, one of his three or four amazing grabs in Colorado, and he had a very violent kind of neck whiplash movement, and fortunately he was okay. So whenever a guy, you know, suffers an injury banging up against the wall violently like Hayward did, I think you're always going to err on the side of caution as opposed to getting him back as quickly as possible.
It was going on with LeBron James last night.
I mean, you
saw the same thing, and then they of course say it's a sprained neck, and I'm like, well, wait a second. You may want to deal with that in the same way you deal with some of the other stuff, but again, he's an alien anyway, so I don't even know if modern medicine is even applies to him at this point. Anyway, Len, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you.
All right, guys. Talk to you next week. Have a good one.
That is Len Casper, brought to you by Fogo de Chão. Celebrate dad, your grad, or those closest to you with the fresh flavors of weekend Brazilian brunch. Now at Fogo de Chão in Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville. I've got an interesting breakdown here regarding the country of origin, the home country of players relatively recently busted for performance-enhancing drugs in baseball.
Oh.
And an analysis by Joe Sheehan on what might be a fundamental unfairness in the joint drug agreement.
Interesting.
Yep.
Trying to think back through some of the guys who have been suspended and who have actually had a couple of people with over-the-counter stuff that, yes, in some countries was not regulated the right way, the proper way, and have had their suspensions reduced.
He's got all the numbers here.
Because of that.
And we'll see if this raises a question as to how baseball should adjudicate some of this stuff. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. Maybe you say, well, they know, they can find out, they can pick up a phone no matter what country they're in. Some of that is
true. Especially if you've made a $240 million contract happen already.
I would tend to think that thinking's valid. If you have all that money and you're just not quite sure you're about to ingest anything, you might want to check it via all of the avenues that MLB and the Players Association give you.
That'll be coming up next. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
So this is from Joe Sheehan's subscription newsletter, which I mentioned before is a must subscribe during baseball season and year round, where he does a lot of his best work even outside of the season when deals are made and teams are doing things, etc. He said Robinson Cano is just the fourth player suspended for a positive test since the start of the 2017 season. He is also the fourth Dominican player to be suspended in that time.
Okay.
Back in 2013, at the time of the Biogenesis story, he says, I broke down the list of MLB players to be suspended under the testing program. Let's update that here. It is MLB players suspended for analytic positives by Birth Nation, going back to 2005. And he includes Puerto Rico, even though it's not an independent country. But for baseball purposes, as in the World Baseball Classic, it is. And he says Ryan Braun is included, but none of the other players suspended in the Biogenesis investigation are. So in this group, 21 have been from the United States, 18 from the Dominican Republic, 5 from Venezuela, 3 from Cuba, 1 from Japan, 1 from Puerto Rico, and 1 from Panama. He then says, let's put that into some context. The following chart has two columns. The first is the data above represented as a percentage of total players suspended. And then there's the percentage of the overall player pool that country had. For example, there were 70% of players in the league from the United States. They made up 42% of suspensions. Dominican players made up only 11% of players. But 36% of all those suspended. Same goes, you know, this is all disproportionate. Venezuela, 7% of players, 10% of suspensions. Cuba, 2% of players, 6% of suspensions. Foreign-born players make up about 30% of the player pool, but 58% of the players suspended. Players hailing from Latin America, save Cuba, account for 20% of the pool and half the suspensions. So where is he going with this? He said, let's be clear. I don't think Latin players are somehow more prone to cheating than their U.S. counterparts.
Yeah, that would be weird.
Right? That would be weird. That would get into places you don't want to go. So after an update, I'll let you know what he is actually alleging here. Yeah, we probably should take this 16-inch softball out of here.
It shouldn't be in here.
I was worried you're going to clip the microphone when
you threw
it at me.
All I'm going to do is spill something or knock something over,
really,
and I can't not throw it. It can't be around here and not just chuck it around.
I know. I don't like 16-inch softball.
I hate 16-inch softball. I don't want to play 16-inch softball
ever again.
But
you're a big guy. You should.
No, I hate it. I can't stand it. I don't want to do it. It's just all I lose, I look at this thing and I see 9 broken fingers.
It hurts.
That's all I can think of.
It's for big, tough guys.
It's not even about that. Don't troll me. I break a finger and now I'm out for the next 6 weeks.
No,
I can't throw the damn thing because I don't have I got busted digits.
It's for like old fashioned, big Chicago guys.
That said, I haven't played softball in a while, because the old job was mostly working during the summer. So if anybody needs somebody, let me know because I'm jonesing to play softball.
All right, so. Joe Sheehan says, I think what we're seeing is a problem mapping the joint drug agreement, which is driven by antiquated U.S. drug laws, to the laws and practices of foreign countries.
Okay, wow, that's deep.
Okay, the gap becomes even more stark when you look at additional data. There's a longer list on the page of the 56 players suspended as minor leaguers while being covered by the MLB JDA. Of those, just 25 were U.S. born, well under half, with almost all the rest hailing from Latin American nations. I don't have access to data on players suspended under the minor league testing regime. But from following those over the years, I'd be shocked if the largest group of players failing tests are not Dominican teenagers. This isn't intentional. He said, I have the lowest opinion of Bud Selig as anyone you'll find. But his goal in turning the screws on players wasn't to chase down and punish 145-pound 17-year-olds from San Pedro de Macorís. He wanted to protect his hero, Hank Aaron, gain leverage over the players, and win press conferences, all while getting Congress off his back. The policies he helped usher in, however, are punishing a disproportionate number of foreign-born players. Treatments that trip drug tests or the JDA, such as using a diuretic deemed a masking agent, could well be best practices where they're used. It's entirely possible for a rule to be neutral in its design, but biased in practice. MLB's drug testing regime seems to be one such rule. By using the laws and standards of the United States in its design, the joint drug agreement is placing an extra burden on foreign-born players, especially those from Latin America and specifically the Dominican Republic. We now have 14 years of data that shows a disproportionate number of players from outside the U.S. are failing tests. That is a problem the league and the MLBPA need to address.
Especially considering the way you're going to now have, Major League Baseball would have those players from those countries enter the league and restricting their earning possibilities the way they have. That story kind of reminded me of something from, I don't know if this helps or hurts Joe Sheehan's point. I don't know if it's necessarily one way or the other, but you remember Raul Mondesi Jr., who is a infield infielder, I guess, for the Royals. I was going to say prospect, but this was a few years ago. In 2016, he was suspended 80 games for violating the PED policy, except he appealed and didn't say that it wasn't something he didn't mean to take. It wasn't said, I don't know how this happened. He knew exactly how it happened. It turns out that there had been a warning issued for over-the-counter cold and flu medicine in the Dominican Republic because it contained too much clenbuterol or clenbuterol at all. I'm not sure if some was too much or if any was too much. I'm not sure if it was a one-drop system.
I think any's too much of clenbuterol.
I don't know much about clenbuterol. Bad? Real bad?
No, but I think that that is one, when I hear the name of that drug, that sounds like, as far as banned substances go, that and you, there's no like amount that's okay.
So he appealed, and on appeal got the suspension reduced from 80 to 50 games. And as memory serves, that is the only suspension for PEDs that has been reduced on appeal like that. Now, what's interesting to note is that Raul Mondesi Jr. was born in the United States. He's the son of Raul Mondesi, the former Rookie of the Year. But he grew up mostly in the Dominican Republic for two reasons. One, that's where his family was. And second, from what I understand, Raul Mondesi Sr. was very emphatic that he come out of a foreign country so that he's eligible for that international market and that signing money.
Instead of the college and amateur draft, right?
The amateur or collegiate draft.
Wow. Well, that's smart on his part.
Oh, that's smart, is really what it is.
Good agenting there if you know your kid's going to be that good.
But remember, too, that this was over-the-counter cold and flu stuff that people knew in the Dominican Republic had either gotten a bad shipment or had different standards for this drug. However it happened to work out, they knew that this existed. And it went out. It was notified. People were told, don't buy whatever it is there. Don't do that here. Brown acid, man. That is the wrong acid to take. Take the green acid. But apparently, if there are different standards and or practices in this country that's aren't legal or are legal in other places, then yeah, I could see where Joe Sheehan's making a point here.
Was green the alternate Woodstock acid that was supposed to be good? I remember the warnings.
I think so.
The warnings were against the over the loudspeakers warning against taking the brown acid.
I was in a pretty different state of mind at Woodstock. I was really out there at that time. You're not born.
Yeah, you wouldn't even have gone to the second Woodstock.
No, not even
at that point.
A little bit. No, when was the second one?
95?
I could have gone. Would have been weird for me to be there, though.
Yeah, because you would have been...
10? Wouldn't have been the only 10-year-old there, though, now that I think about it.
It was 1999.
1999? Oh, 14. I could have almost driven myself there.
It was called Woodstock 99. That's how I remembered that.
Is that
how
they did?
Good marketing on their end.
They really branded that. It stuck home with me.
And I was, 2 months old for the first one?
Did you go?
I didn't. I wanted to, I was born in time for the moon landing.
It was a big conversation. Really?
I got to be just 2.5 weeks before the moon landing or 3 weeks before the moon landing.
It's my mother's birthday, June 20th.
They set me in front of the TV. They tell me the story.
You've seen history.
I have seen it. They said I watched the actual moon landing.
Did you get yelled at to make sure you remember this?
That was Nixon's resignation.
I know.
and I did. I was old enough at that point to actually, I was told, don't ever forget
this. You were sat in front of the Nixon resignation?
I was standing in the kitchen watching on our little black and white TV as he boarded the helicopter, and he made the peace sign gesture.
I'm not a crook.
He got onto the helicopter and left, and my mother said, don't ever forget seeing that.
I remember in...
It was that, and what was the other one? It was watching Johnny Unitas on the Chargers. Oh, yes, God. As a toddler. You can tell people you saw Unitas play.
If I remember correctly, and I wish no one yelled at me to remember this, but I'm pretty sure that in fourth grade, Mrs. Suvar's class, that was fifth grade, they wheeled in one of those giant tube TVs into the classroom for the OJ verdict.
Wow.
They brought it in.
Wow, that's cool.
It was wheeled into the St. Jude's classroom in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I remember watching it then.
Clenbuterol, primarily used to treat asthma or respiratory distress, major stimulant when used above the recommended dose, used for weight loss by bodybuilders. Wasn't it originally... It might have been in Primatene at one point. I thought there was clenbuterol. I hope I'm not making that up. And apparently everybody's saying the other Woodstock was 94 and not 99. That's the second Woodstock.
Jay.
And now we've got our acid truthers here. Brown acid at Woodstock being bad was a myth. It was because it was much stronger than normal dose and people couldn't handle it. And as we talk about this, the
we need another. The more you know, there you know, like, didn't, we didn't is, know our acids.
Yeah, the two
if
two.
If I'm not selective with that thing, it's gonna wear out. I'm gonna need to like find another one.
Yeah, the 224 says regarding the joint drug agreement, they call it a basic example of what lawyers call disparate impact. And what I'm waiting for, the response I'm waiting for here that hasn't come. I thought as soon as we laid out the Joe Sheehan argument for the disproportionate impact of this on another country, I was certain that multiple 815 texters would be like, no, it's because these Dominicans would do whatever it takes. They're more desperate.
So they're not funny enough in the clubhouse.
They got to cheat because these are the guys using milk cartons for gloves and they're throwing bottle caps and using broomsticks. Of course they're cheating. They're more desperate.
I mean, it kind of changes. Shouldn't that change that mindset when you see a guy? I mean, this is what Frank Thomas was going off about on the show an hour or so ago. He was on Fox Sports and we replayed it here. He made a $240 million contract, Robinson Cano did. And then he got busted for cheating. I'm not necessarily convinced that he wasn't cheating before the $240 million mm-hmm. contract, because once you do it, to me, that really changes my perspective on a guy's career. You know, the whole Ryan Braun thing did it once, or even the Andy A-Rod. Pettit used it to fix an injury kind of thing. I'm not sold on that. I'm willing to hear you. I'm willing to forgive in some cases, depending on who you are and how you've apologized for it, what you're, you know, how the kind of guy you've been otherwise. But I'm not altogether ready to say that, well, Robbie Cano just had a bad year last year or whenever it was and then started changing his offseason regimen. I'm not ready to do that.
This is Bill on Capitol Hill on the Score. What's happening, Bill?
Hello, lads. How's the empire?
No better than when you last asked.
Festering, actually.
Yeah. I got to check, though. It's part of the ritual. I appreciate your conversation on the roids. I figured you're straight trolling me. I read Sheehan's data in part as an indictment of the Players Association. I mean, how the hell are you not taking care of your foreign players and taking them aside and say, hey, lads, you know, different set of rules.
They haven't done that for 10 years, though.
Well, okay, but I mean, it's quite a step down. I mean, the MLB Players Association used to be unarguably the most powerful union in the country. I mean, they, mm-hmm. you know, they bent the nation's past under their will. Now, I mean, these guys are just, you know, daisy cutters, and I don't understand what the hell's going on over there. I mean, I read that as a pretty severe indictment of the leadership, that they're not taking care of their foreign-born players. So that's where I am on that.
I think you're 100% right, Bill, and I'll tell you how they got fooled by Major League Baseball as is. They took the prospect of an international draft far too seriously. They represented a bunch of their Latin American players strongly against the international draft when really all it was a giant club that MLB was going to wave around, because the logistics of enforcing an international draft would have been too much for Major League Baseball to begin with. So they capitulated, the union did, to a bunch of other things, got rolled over by Major League Baseball because they were worried about this phantom of an international draft. Meanwhile, we've got gourmet chefs in clubhouses. We've got later start times. We've got the shortening of a flight window that necessitates day games after night games, or ruins that possibility. They caved on some of the – they got some of the creature comforts they wanted, but they have left very material issues, especially to that port.
And members of material issue.
Oh, good God, you're horrible. They have left very – they've left very big issues out there. One might say material issues out there.
That's
unattended
good.
To.
He got
unattended
all that
to.
Yeah. Let's be fair, though. These kids are not theirs. They're not part of the union.
I think that's another shortcoming of the union. Oh, I think they need to look out for their minor league players more often.
Some of them aren't even minor league players.
Well, that's a fair point. A 14-year-old in the Dominican Republic is not a prospective union member. You're right.
The question is when the fuzzy jurisdiction of some of these academies, when you've got these gleaming buildings where, even though they're not your property yet, not your employees yet, they're working out, and it might be a 14-year-old, might be a 15-year-old. They've got resources, you haven't even drafted some of these kids yet, and they're the Braves and the Cubs and all these places in the Dominican Republic. You've got team-owned facilities. Sure, there's big signs up there, I'm sure. You can start to educate them, but I don't think the Players Association is busy in there trying to tell people what's going on.
Well, they live in those gray areas, but Major League Baseball hasn't had any problem with punishing the teams who have been found to traffic those gray areas. I mean, right. John Coppolella got banned for life from baseball. I mean, the Braves used way too much, and that's – they were just – it was said then.
Yeah, the Dave
I
Wilder
talked about
stuff,
it then, and we're talking about it still. The Braves were the team that got caught. That's all they were. to say that they were the only team engaged in those practices of signing kids well before they were eligible or signing them to more than they were operating for, they were the team that got caught. Let's be real clear about that part of the transaction.
I have seen him in the hallways. He's got an office. That's how powerful Dana is.
He's got an office?
Yeah. Yeah,
is he kicking people out and commandeering offices,
or he's working in promotions because he's back there working on
Head
things.
Of time.
In this darkened office. There's like three layers of security to get to him. There's like there's two secretaries. There's an administrative assistant.
I was certainly accosted when I tried to walk down that wing of the building.
And he also has
they're all just making his agate.
He has the $40,000 private soundproof phone booth too.
Very nice.
So it's all coming back around. We are going to say good afternoon to the McNeil and Parkins show in just a bit. We are Bernstein and McKnight, middays 9-1 on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Frank Thomas on Fox Sports and feeling very strongly about it. We played his extended comments in their entirety earlier on in the show. This segment of Bernstein and McKnight brought to you by Fogarty Schoen. Celebrate dad, your grad, or those closest to you with the fresh flavors of weekend Brazilian brunch now at Fogarty Schoen in Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville.
A future Hall of Famer has just chimed in on the Robinson Cano suspension. It is Miguel Cabrera. His quotes are in the Detroit Free Press, and they read like this. This is just out. This is brand new. This is fresh. I know Cano for a lot of years, and I know he didn't cheat. I'm effing mad right now. His doctor prescribed the medication. I think he got all the paperwork. Why he get positive, I don't understand that. If it's something for him to get, I don't understand it if it's something for him to get better. That's why I'm so mad. Autoplay ad. Oh, my God, there's an autoplay ad on this thing. I have a personal vendetta against the autoplay ad.
Yeah, you do.
I had to close it.
Every morning, he's screaming at his computer.
I just don't know. The bane and scourge of our existence.
Yeah, me bringing bacon didn't help.
Cool. I was in the middle of reading something from Miguel Cabrera.
Let the record show, I did follow through on my pledge to bring you each a big strip
you
of
did.
Bacon.
You did. Yes. You bought one strip of bacon for each of us.
It was delicious.
It was very good.
It's all you need.
Very good. Yep. It's only the one. Mm-hmm. Okay, Cabrera continues. His doctor prescribed the medication. I think he got all the paperwork. Why he tested positive, I don't understand that. If it's something for him to get better, that's why I'm so mad. Cabrera said he's a Hall of Fame player. He plays every day. He does everything right. Now everybody's going to write all this stupid crap. Here's the thing. We heard statements of denial from everybody.
Yep.
Almost everybody. I mean, honestly, truly, Dan, two players, Andy Pettit and Giambi. Those are the only guys I can think of. And
Giambi just apologized for something amorphous. Giambi said, I'm sorry. He never said, I'm sorry that I used steroids.
And I'm willing to count that as an apology because of how few apologies we've seen in this game. The reputation of these guys is torched and gone. And if you're going to, like Cano says he did or is starting to say he did, come up with some sort of doctor or some sort of medical reason to do what you did, you have to understand that there are so many, you have to willingly jump through as many hoops as possible. You have to essentially get out there on Twitter and say, hi, I'm undertaking this path. I'm going to submit these papers to doctors, to MLB, to the Players Union so that I can take these supplements, these prescribed drugs or whatever the hell you're taking. Verlander had it too yesterday. Did you see this, Verlander, on Twitter?
Yeah, somebody caught him being hypocritical based on whether or not it's a teammate or not, right?
Well, yeah, I think that's been an issue too. But Verlander said it, excuse coming in 3-2-1, and like 30 seconds later, news of Robinson Cano making his doctor's excuse came through.
This is Jeff in Bloomingdale on the Score. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, guys. Interesting conversation about the PEDs, but the Dominican issue with players not knowing if they're taking illegal drugs that aren't recommended by Major League Baseball. But I just don't understand, and I know you've just had comments from another player, but why would a player that's been in the league for maybe 12 or 15 years, multiple All-Star games, not know what he's putting into his body?
Well, what I get to, Jeff, is they always tell you, never, ever do anything without checking it first. There are 24/7 hotlines where you can call. There is a website you can go to. They have everything. And it's one thing for it to be a 15-year-old kid. It's another thing for it to be an established star making that kind of money. Before you take anything, you, whatever that, where a doctor in another country where there are other laws, all the more reason. I agree with you on that, Jeff. You are told, don't ingest anything without checking.
Yeah, I care about the lying. That's what I care about most more than anything. I think Roger Clemens, I think Barry Bonds, I think all those, you should be in the Hall of Fame. The fact that the lying and the taking of it affects their legacy doesn't affect whether they should be in the Hall of Fame for me. Don't lie. Mm-hmm. Don't be dumb about this.
Don't treat us like we don't know what we're seeing. Dan McNeil and Danny Parkins are going to join us as we do transition after an update on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.